This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. Look all around the world and you'll find that poverty rates have been going down in every region except one. In sub-Saharan Africa, the number of people in extreme poverty has doubled, and Africa risks being a continent left behind. Maybe one reason is Africa's many appalling governments, and we will examine one such government this morning as a correspondent reflects on 4 years covering Africa. NPR's Jason Beaubien continues our week-long series with a look at President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe.
During President Robert Mugabe's first two decades in power, Zimbabwe grew into one of the most prosperous nations in sub-Saharan Africa. Its beef was prized in specialty shops in Europe. Its tobacco farms generated more than $7 billion a year in sales. Literacy rates were some of the highest in the developing world. Zimbabwe still had its problems, but compared to the rest of Africa, things were going relatively well. Then in the late 1990s, everything started to fall apart. The tipping point was the disclosure that allies of President Mugabe had looted a war veteran's pension fund. When the war vets demanded compensation, Mugabe told them to help themselves to white-owned farms.
There was no need for things to go the way they did, given that the government was declaring a policy on land.
Jonathan Moyo served as Robert Mugabe's Minister of Information during the height of the chaotic land reform movement. Moyo has since fallen out of favor with Mugabe and is now one of the president's harshest critics. Zimbabwe's violent land reform program drove most of the country's white commercial farmers off their land. Many of the farms ended up in the hands of Mugabe's allies, including at the time Moyo. Others disintegrated into chaos. Moyo says the farm invasions, which included the killing of white farmers, were orchestrated by Mugabe. The campaign was run by the chairman of the Liberation War Veterans, Chenjerai Hunzi.
He used to fly. We have a military helicopter, you know, covering 3, 4, 5 provinces a day. And obviously that was not his helicopter or plane. It was a military plane. And you add one and one, you can see who he's working with.
Moyo says land reform was not a spontaneous uprising by black peasants, as Mugabe likes to portray it. The movement which destroyed the country's agricultural economy was, in fact, Moyo says, government policy. By the year 2003, Zimbabwe was facing shortages of food, fuel, and foreign currency. In the capital, Harare, lines of beat-up Toyota Corollas, Nissan pickups, and Honda Civics stretched for blocks outside gasoline stations. Some people had been waiting for days to get fuel.
You just go hunting all over. Yesterday I went to about nine service stations.
This driver, who's a civil servant, doesn't want to give his name. He says he'll lose his job if he's caught talking to a foreign reporter. He spent most of the last evening driving from one gas station to another in search of gas.
And there was virtually nothing at every one of them except the last one where I went to, and there was a queue, and I joined the queue, and I was in the queue until about 7:30, and then they said, sorry, we have run dry, so I had to drive out. And then this morning I started all over again.
Zimbabwe's gas shortage was driven in large part by the government setting the price of gasoline at 20 U.S. cents a gallon and refusing to raise it. The civil servant added that price controls were also causing shortages of most staple foods.
You know, you have problems in getting mealie meal, you've got problems in getting cooking oil, you've got problems in getting some of the basic things, sugar, and so forth and so on.
Ever since land reform, this country, which used to be the regional breadbasket, has been unable to produce enough food to feed its own people. The head of the World Food Program, James Morris, during a visit to Harare in 2003, was visibly frustrated with Zimbabwe's rapid agricultural collapse.
This is clearly a place that's had enormous resources, very successfully engaged over the years, and it doesn't have the full team working right now. And that's been very harmful to Zimbabwe, and in fact it's been very harmful to all of Southern Africa, because this place has the capacity to feed all of Southern Africa.
And it isn't just agriculture that Mugabe's regime has driven into the ground. Schools, hospitals, sewage treatment plants are falling into disrepair. After Zimbabwe's cities voted heavily against Mugabe's ruling party in 2005 elections, the government launched an urban cleanup campaign that destroyed the homes and businesses of some 700,000 people. This year, inflation has risen above 1,000%. John Robertson, an economist in Harare, says the country's hyperinflation is being driven primarily by the government borrowing money to cover recurring costs like wages and operating expenses.
That means that when they've got to pay that money back, they've got to borrow it again to pay it back. And they've also got to borrow the money to pay the interest on the money that they borrowed previously. So when you've got to borrow money to pay back money, and you've got to borrow money to pay the interest on the money you borrowed previously, you now have a new debt, which is accruing new interest, and you've got to borrow that to pay it back.
Like a shopaholic binging on credit cards, Zimbabwe's frantically digging itself deeper and deeper into debt. The government tried to control this by declaring that it would set interest rates rather than letting them be set by the market. Of course, the rates they set for their own debts were extremely low.
Markets are very powerful, and I think any government anywhere in the world that decides to go into battle against market forces tends to lose. But while they're losing, the country goes downhill. And this is exactly what we've experienced in Zimbabwe.
The downhill slide has affected every aspect of society. Education rates are slipping. Some 4 million people, or almost a third of the population, have fled Zimbabwe to try to find work abroad. Life expectancy is now just 37 years, one of the lowest in Africa. This June, the United Nations downgraded Zimbabwe from a developing country to a least developed nation, ranking it on par with some of the poorest places on the planet. President Mugabe is 82 years old, but it's still unclear when he will step down. Peter Kagwanja with the International Crisis Group in Pretoria, South Africa, says Mugabe is pitting potential successors against one another to extend his own time in power.
The very old idea of Mobutu Sese Seko Nzaio, the state is me and I'm the state, it's a very familiar idea. And that survives by destroying all credible opposition and dividing the ruling party. And Mugabe is playing that card quite effectively.
Kagwanja and many other analysts predict there won't be a solution to Zimbabwe's problems until Robert Mugabe leaves office. The good news for Africa is that Mugabe is one of the last of the African big men, such as Mobutu Sese Seko of Zaire, Daniel Arap Moi in Kenya, Omar Bongo of Gabon, and Charles Taylor in Liberia. The bad news is that as the big men depart, there's a new generation of leaders who are tempted to cling to power by almost any means necessary. Idris Deby in Chad and Yoweri Museveni in Uganda both abolished term limits to keep themselves in power. Olusegun Obasanjo in Nigeria toyed with amending the constitution to get himself a third term. And Meles Zenawi in Ethiopia sent soldiers into the streets and halted ballot counting when it looked like he was about to be ousted last year. So the challenges of good governance in Africa remain huge. Jason Beaubien, NPR News.
You can see an audio slideshow on the dismantling of Zimbabwe's shantytowns, and you can hear more stories in Jason's series by going to NPR.org. And the series continues tomorrow as we examine how disease weakens individuals and a continent.